Well, welcome to this Monday edition of Main Street. Glad to have you along. I'm Eric Etheridge in for Craig Blumenschein. Hope you had a wonderful weekend despite the smoky conditions for many of us. The farmers market opened this season in downtown Fargo. I gotta say, it was fun to see so many smiling faces just enjoying local food, crafts, and each other. It was a great community get together in a thriving downtown Fargo. Another community, albeit smaller, that is equally successful in far western North Dakota is Beach. You might be familiar with the town when you hear our translator IDs. They have a lot going on in Beach these days. We're going to talk to the longtime mayor who will reflect on its growing success. Plus, we'll sample an artist that Mike Olson has loved playing over the years, Hayes Carl. The Americana singer-songwriter has some new music, and we'll give you a little preview of that. Speaking of music, we have some great musicians out of North Dakota over the years, have we not? Of course, there's the great Peggy Lee, presently the state's official troubadour Chuck Suki, and our very own Tom Brousseau, host of the Great American Folk Show. But it's hard to think of someone that has entertained as many people, millions and millions of people, as this kid from Strasburg, who is the subject of a new Prairie Public original TV documentary, which is premiering tonight, 7 p.m. Central, 6 Mountain, on the television service of Prairie Public. Our director of radio, Ann Alquist, had this conversation with our CEO, John Harris, and director of television, Barb Gravel, part of the creative team behind Lawrence Welk, a North Dakota farm boy.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Lawrence Welk Show, celebrating more than 50 years on television.
I wanted to start off with the connection with public television, because that's certainly how I know Lawrence Welk. He was on public television for decades. Before that, he was on commercial television. He had a very successful career in Los Angeles. But it does seem appropriate to have a documentary about him produced by a public media outlet. And Prairie Public is also a special place because Lawrence Welk was from North Dakota. So, John, I'm curious about the origin story of this documentary about Lawrence Welk.
Well, Anne, boy, there's almost too much information to tell you about. I mean, Lawrence Welk has a great history. He's a very interesting man, and he has a long history in entertainment and music, of course. Born in Strasburg, North Dakota, of course, in 1903 on a homestead. And you asked the question about how it ended up on public television, but really, he paid a lot of dues playing in the upper Midwest, and then, of course, actually debuted on ABC in July the 2nd of 1955 and played there till 1971 when they canceled him. Well, you know, they thought that was the end of the show, but Lawrence went into syndication, and I you'll hear in the show, Mary Lou Metzger said they never missed a show. They never missed a beat. They just kept on going, and it stayed in syndication until 1982. And then from 1982 to 1987, a couple of specials might have been made, but I know that Oklahoma Educational Television Authority, the public broadcasting entity in Oklahoma, aired a special in March of 1987 for a pledge special. And it did so well, they decided to pick up the and have control of the reruns where they were able to get the opportunity to present those to public television stations across the United States that wanted to air them. And so that began in October of 1987. And at Prairie Public, we're still airing the Lawrence Welk Show on television.
John, you had mentioned how in the course of making the documentary, you know, one of the people who knew Lawrence Welk said they never missed a show. There's a great clip, a moment in the documentary about how growing up on a farm influenced Lawrence Welk, about the value of hard work. And we've got a clip of the historian Lance Ritchie talking about how that affected him for the rest of his life.
Lawrence learned how to work hard on the farm. He always said that having grown up working the fields, working in the barn, doing all the manual labor, really made his hard work slightly effortless for him. He knew what it was like to put in 12 hours of labor every day, 7 days a week. It built an inner strength, both physically and emotionally. He was just able to work incredibly long hours without growing psychologically tired.
Barb, I want to bring you in. You're the director of television. You were boots on the ground working with your team to do the interviews. When you hear that clip, you've been to the homestead in Strasbourg. What's your reaction when you hear Lance Ritchie talking about the hard work of working on a homestead and how that affected Lawrence Welk?
Well, that is something that is certainly common among immigrants who grew up in the era that Lawrence Welk did in Strasbourg, North Dakota. It was not an easy life. There was a lot of isolation based on the fact that the homesteads and the farms were out really in the middle of nowhere, and so much work needed to be done by these families. One reason, really, that immigrant families had so many children to help with the work on the farm, whether it was the actual farming of the crops or taking care of the animals, building structures, there was nothing out there. And so Lawrence Welk really did grow up with a very solid sense of hard work, dedication, a little isolation, a little bit of a shy personality is what he had. The language was something that I think as he got out into the world, he felt a little self-conscious of his accent. And, he was a frugal person throughout his whole life. And that's something that stemmed from that immigrant, experience and not having a lot of money and not having a lot of excess things that really, in the end, toward the end of his life, he was able to garner. But that played a lot into his ethics and his appreciation for hard work. And those people who he realized also he expected his staff throughout the years to be ready. He was a demanding boss, and that all stemmed from his German-Russian culture and his upbringing.
Well, let's get into Strasbourg because it was such an important cultural influence for Lawrence Welk. It was a German-speaking community. There is a rich history of Germans from Russia settling in North Dakota. A lot of sad stories, a lot of stories of hardship, of Germans leaving Russia or leaving Russian-occupied territories and then leaving Germany for a new life in the Middle West, in the Midwest of the United States. Tell us a bit about that culture, about being a German from Russia. You mentioned his accent. Of course, it's very distinctive, wonderful, wonderful, which is also the name of his autobiography. Can you share a bit about how that experience of being a German from Russia, where do we see that show up in the Lawrence Welk show? And how did that show up in the interviews that you did with people who knew Lawrence Welk?
Well, as we know, in 1862, Abraham Lincoln brought about the Homestead Act, and that really changed the landscape of the Midwest, I feel, encouraging people to move west, to build out that part of the United States. And with the incoming immigrants, it did change the landscape of the cultures that were present in the United States at that time. And, they brought their food ways. They brought their religion. They brought their culture. They brought their music. And this was something that wasn't an easy life, but there was so much gratitude, I feel, from these people that came from different parts of the world because they were coming for a better life. That's what Christina and Ludwig Welk wanted, is to come here. They already had family in Eureka, South Dakota. They first landed there, and then they branched off into Strasbourg, North Dakota. And with their children and other family members, they really were able to make a nice life for themselves. This was a very strong ethical foundation that they had, and I think it provided their children, certainly Lawrence Welk, with the roots that they needed to continue their lives.
One of the things that a lot of first generation children of immigrants experience is that they'll reject the language, they'll reject the culture. Of course, Lawrence Welk didn't do that. He embraced it. I mean, he made it his living to a degree. He played the accordion and he brought that culture to the masses through the power of television in the early 1950s and throughout the 60s, 70s, and to today. I'm wondering about the criticism of Lawrence Welk. There's a moment in the documentary where the historian Lance Ritchie talks about how he responded to that, and we'll play that clip here.
Critics were brutal to Lawrence. Most critics are aiming to please a more urbane and sophisticated class of readers, and they didn't have much respect for what Lawrence was doing. They thought that his show was hokey, not very intellectual, the music was old-fashioned, and Lawrence would have said, "You're right on every account, but that's what I'm trying to do." They simply had a different vision of what television ought to be. Lawrence thought television was there to entertain the viewer, and too many critics thought that television was there to improve the viewers.
So I'm curious what you learned about, as you talked to people who knew Lawrence Welk, what you learned about his ability to deal with that kind of criticism. You know, working in show business is not an easy, it's not an easy business, but he seemed to manage it with a special flair.
Yeah, you know, he grew up, as we talked about, on the farmstead. He lived there till he was 21. Music was a big part of his life. He learned that you had to work hard to accomplish things. He asked his dad at, what was he, 16 or 17, if you'll buy me an accordion, I'll stay on the farm for 4 years and work, and everything I make from playing music, I'll give to you. And of course, his dad said, okay, I'll do that for you. And he bought him a $400 accordion. And so he did that and played. And as Barb kind of mentioned, they were speaking German. Of course, it was a German family homesteading in North Dakota at the time. And people around them were speaking German. So, yes, Lawrence didn't learn English really until his adult life, more so. And as he started venturing out, so he had that hard accent. And I can't speak to the man because I didn't know him, necessarily personally growing up, obviously, but he obviously was a man who understood music, understood how to entertain people, and it didn't bother him to be made fun of to some degree. I would think it may have bothered him a little bit, but he learned that, to be honest, he played off of that. His accent was something that had even hit mainstream media with Saturday Night Live.
This is PBS.
Thank you, thank you. What a wonderful evening filled with so much whimsy and wonder.
Wonderful, wonderful was something that he was known for. And so he used that to his advantage over the years. And he was smart that way. He realized, yeah, my show's corny, but that's what I want it to be. This is what it's about. The American public want this. They love it. And he knew what his audience wanted. He understood and he played up to a group that wanted to hear his music and see his show.
You know, I think about the time when his show was in its heyday, broadcasting out of Los Angeles. There were some dark years. The Vietnam conflict was going on. There were some really dark moments. So seen the body bags coming back and the napalm. I can just imagine, I wasn't alive then, but I can just imagine turning on the Lawrence Welk show. And it's so joyful. It's just such a spark of joy in terms of what was going on historically at the time. He reminds me a bit of Dolly Parton, actually, who is, still with us, a great entertainer, and has really embraced criticism and has just been a wit about it and is now considered a national treasure, which I think Lawrence Welk, by a lot of people, would be called a national treasure.
That was written about my home state, North Dakota, and it features our quartet.
You are Dakota, North Dakota. See the cattle and the wheat, and folks that can't be beat, you say hello.
Well, absolutely he is. In North Dakota, obviously, he's a native son. And, has received awards in the state, the Rough Rider Award for North Dakota, and, has gone on to have stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, in fact, two of them. And in some ways, his secretary, who you'll see in the documentary, talks about him. He may not even realized how famous he was. He just continued to work and continued to strive to present a quality product that people enjoyed. And he had almost a formula, with a little dancing, a little music, some fun. It was fun to watch his show. I came to like it as I grew older. I realized what kind of show it really was.
There's a wonderful moment in the documentary when Evelyn Schwab talks about what it was like when Lawrence Welk would return to Strasbourg.
My dad was so proud of Lawrence when he'd come back to Strasburg. Oh my God, that was another 4th of July. We had a bowling alley at that time, and he'd fix breakfast in there. Everybody could come and have breakfast. He'd fry eggs and whatever.
She described it as the 4th of July. It was, like you said, the son returning home, the successful son. Barb, you visited Welk's homestead in Strasburg. Did Welk return to Strasburg often? And how is he remembered there today?
Lawrence Welk did return to Strasburg often, almost every year. And the people of Strasburg were so proud of him. He felt a connection there. We have a quote in the documentary where he, and I thought this was interesting, says, "It's nice to be back home." His connection with the people there remained strong through his life. You know, he realized and he appreciated that town and he felt gratitude for it because I think that was his foundation that made him who he was. And he dedicated a lot of things to the town, whether it be the swimming pool there or gave funding for different things throughout the town, maybe the church and the organ in the church. But yeah, that was the backbone to what he remembered. And they were proud of him and he was proud of them.
We know Lawrence Welk as an entertainer, a performer. We don't really think of him as a businessman, but he was a very savvy businessman. John, can you take the story from there about how he developed his business?
Well, and you're right. I mean, Lawrence Welk worked hard. He did a lot of different things. And while he was known for the show, and most people know him as a musician and a showman, so to speak, he also was a pretty savvy businessman. He had many real estate deals. He tried different things, and he ended up buying an area in California and built it into a huge resort. He surrounded himself with good people and people that knew how to do business and help him grow his business. And he had that never give up attitude. And, you know, he proved with hard work and perseverance, you can do anything. And he did a lot. And he respected his people and he loved his audience. And he did everything he could to take care of his family, his biological family, the best he could, but also his musical family. And he loved them all.
So Lawrence Welk died in 1992. Why now? Why this documentary now at this moment? And what can we learn from Lawrence Welk?
To back up and give you a little bit of background on this documentary. This documentary spawned out of some talks with State Historical Society of North Dakota, which took over the Welk Homestead in, I believe it's 2015, and set it up, you know, as a state historical site. And also the Friends of the Welk Homestead group, Michael Miller, Alan Burke, and Rob Hanna, and Bill Peterson, individuals from those organizations, were talking with me and asked about what can we do to raise the awareness or do something with the Welk Homestead. And I had said, well, we do things on arts, history, and culture often. And I told him, yeah, we can do what we call a short, you know, a 4 to 6 minute piece highlighting about it. And we started talking about that. And then it kept growing. And of course, when you start talking about the homestead and how it ties in with Lawrence Welk, there's just so much story there, so much information that you want to tell. A 30 minute documentary is what we talked about doing. And then we started looking for funding to make it happen. And of course, the Germans from Russia Heritage Collection got involved a little bit. And I should say, and I want to thank Mike and Peggy Bullinger and their family for helping to give some funding so that we could get this show started. And then we started the show, and I worked with those group of individuals I mentioned, and we set up a list of people to interview. And we started talking about a long list, and that was the problem. There were so many people. When you watch this documentary, of course, Lance Ritchie, and they told me at that point, Lance Ritchie was writing a biography, a book that was going to be real detailed biography of Lawrence Welk and his life and his history. And we thought, well, there's kind of a basis for a theme throughout it and somebody who's done a ton of research. And while there were so many people we wanted to interview, We interviewed, of course, with Lance Ritchie and then Margaret Herron Letterman, his longtime secretary and personal assistant. Of course, Mary Lou Metzger, who was on the show and hosted some specials over the years. Bobby Burgess, if you ever watched the show much, you've always seen him dance with different partners. And then some relatives, Jerry Klein, and of course, nieces of Lawrence, Edna and Evelyn. And they were big, Edna and Evelyn were big on building that homestead back up initially, because the homestead was run by the family for quite a few years. And then, of course, Friends of Welk Homestead helped out, and then the State Historical Society took it over in July of 2015. Well, brought Barb on, and then Cassie Pierce, and I have to mention her name. Cassie Pierce and Barb were videographers on this project, and Cassie did almost all the editing, if not all of it. Barb did some timelines and things. And then we realized we had so much content, it wasn't a 30-minute show. It needed to expand, and we made it a 60-minute documentary. What we did and what we have, I think, is a great representation of the life and history of the Welk Homestead and the life of Lawrence Welk.
I am incredibly proud of this documentary and the fact that we were able to curate all of these interviews and make it an incredibly comprehensive presentation of Lawrence Welk's life. I feel like what people can take away from this documentary is anything is possible. Anything is possible if you have the drive, if you work hard, if you treat your people and you treat people well, that anything is possible. Some have said this is a rags to riches story, and I would agree. When you move to the United States as an immigrant, as Lawrence Welk's family did, and you know, you're born with almost nothing on the plains of North Dakota, and you become what Lawrence Welk had become, the proof is in the pudding right there. He was able to, with so much hard work and dedication, really make himself into a national treasure, as you said. Lawrence Welk, a North Dakota farm boy, is very telling. You know what I mean? He came from North Dakota and he considered that his home until the end. And I feel like a lot of people can learn a lot from him and be proud that he is from North Dakota. And we're proud at Prairie Public that we were able to tell this story.
Friends, there you have our show, Hit Songs and Fashions Through the Years. We hope we brought you some pleasant memories. Now from all of our musical family, good wishes, good health, and good night.
Congratulations on this accomplishment.
Thank you.
You just heard Ann Alquist's conversation with Prairie Public President and CEO John Harris and Director of Television Barb Gravel. You can hear it in their voices just how excited and proud they are to share Lawrence Welk, a North Dakota farm boy, with you and everybody. It premieres tonight, 7 p.m. Central, 6 Mountain. Do not miss it. Boy, I tell you, the band leader and musician and charming TV personality from Strasburg, North Dakota, he really discovered the magic formula to entertain so many people from so many walks of life. And maybe we could all use a common denominator show like that to kind of forget about the world and its troubles for a while. That was Lawrence Welk's Power. Be sure and check out the program tonight. Coming up on Main Street, we'll get a taste of what Mike Olson is playing on his Into the Music show these days, and we will take you to Beach, North Dakota, in the far western portion of the state. We'll meet its mayor, a fun conversation that Craig has with Walter Lazinski, who will share his hopes for leading this growing rural town. Stay with us.
In the spirit of the man who once said, "Look for the helpers," Prairie Public is proud to present Be My Neighbor Day, a free family celebration of community and kindness, Tuesday, August 5th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Fargo Civic Plaza. Kids, you can meet Daniel Tiger and Katarina Kitty Cat from PBS Kids Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. Plus, enjoy hands-on activities like writing a thank you card to a first responder that highlights the importance of being a caring neighbor. You can also do that by bringing toiletries, kitchen items, and cleaning supplies to donate to a nonprofit supporting single moms and their children experiencing poverty. Celebrate community and kindness at Prairie Public's Be My Neighbor Day, August 5th, at the Fargo Civic Plaza. Info at prairiepublic.org.
Glad you're listening to member-supported Prairie Public. I'm Eric Etheridge in for Craig all this week here on Main Street. Craig Blumenschein had the chance to take a beach vacation to the North Dakota-Montana border. No sand or ocean to speak of, you might say. Well, that's okay. Tag along with Craig right now to the Badlands Barista Coffee Shop in beautiful Beach, North Dakota, where he sat down with Beach's head of state, Mayor Walter Leszczynski.
I don't know if, Mr. Mayor, if I should call you a two-term mayor. You served from 2006 to 2018, and now you're back in office.
I am.
Welcome to Main Street.
Thank you.
Tell me about your political journey. Why did you want to become mayor way back in 2006, and then we'll get to why you ran again?
I started out pretty young. I think I was 23, 24, when I got onto the city council. And it was something I thought, well, I should see about doing this and be involved. I had moved to Beach in 1980, and so it wasn't very long. We hadn't been here a long time.
What? Why did you move here?
Job. It kind of, you know, the opportunities came up. And so we moved here, and I loved the town, and I've been here ever since.
So you ran for mayor. What was the first big decision that you had to make that disappointed folks? Do you remember?
I don't know which one disappointed them, but the first project that we did was we built the new fire hall that's up on the hill. And because everything was where City Hall is, and the fire hall was part of that. And there were seven trucks in a two-bay building. And every time there was a fire, the one truck that they needed or trucks that they needed were always in the back. Oh, and they would pull them out and park them on the street and then take off and then put them all back.
What was the town named from?
The town's name came from a Colonel Beach in the time around when Custer was going from North Dakota to South Dakota. And or from Montana, and he was the surveyor. He surveyed the land around here for the railroad and for other plots, I guess, so to speak. But
it seems like a wonderful town where folks know folks.
Yeah,
I came into the coffee shop this morning where we're doing this interview. Badlands Barista, I believe, is the name of the place, and you weren't here yet.
Yeah,
and the barista said, "Well, I'll just call him."
Yeah.
And you know everybody in here. You know everyone in town.
Well, kind of. I like to think so, but I don't know if that's true. A lot of new people.
What's bringing people to Beach?
I think after COVID, a lot of people were looking for an outlet, someplace they could go that was different, got them out into the open. We've got people that came and work at both implement dealerships, the John Deere and the Case dealerships. A lot of the people that came in were people that had skills like that. And
is that a challenge then to support more folks who are coming here? I always view Mr. Mayor Beach as kind of the gateway to North Dakota. As you're coming east on I-94, Montana, in its eastern side of the state, just wasn't very pretty. And all of a sudden you come to Beach.
Yeah.
And here we are. Do you view it that way?
Yeah, you know, we're so close to Montana, you can almost throw a rock and get it into Montana. So that's kind of the way we view it. We're exit one, so first one in the state. Guys on the other end are the tail end of the state.
You're the front side.
And we're the fun side.
All right. You were mayor from 2006 to 2018.
Yeah.
And then you left office.
I did.
But you came back.
Yes, I did.
How did that happen?
Oh, I had a few people go, you know, you should run. There's stuff going on. And it turned out that it was the right opportunity. I wasn't going to. I had figured I was done with my political stints and got to thinking about it. There were several projects coming up. And the city auditor, you know, said, well, you should consider it. And I said, no, not doing it. I come in the day that you had to. I tried talking a few people into it, you know, to run in and to be a mayor, and I couldn't get them to do it. And so I came in the day of, about 12:30 in the afternoon. I had to have so many signatures in order to be on the ballot, and I had to have it in by 4 o'clock. And I came out and I stopped at the cafe down here and at Badlands Barista here and all the lumberyard and a few places like that. And within the first hour, my sheet was full. So I took it back in and I got reelected, and here I am again.
Is it a strong mayor type of government? You don't have a city administrator or a city planner. You have a mayor and council?
Mayor and council, yes. And,
is that overwhelming for you at times?
No, I like it. It's, if you've got a good council, you can accomplish a lot of things. And I've been lucky enough to have a good council.
So your term now runs through the end of June of next year?
Yes.
You gonna run again?
I don't know. We've talked that after the first 2 years, I said, you know, this has been a great term. I think I might run again. And
what are your priorities, Mr. Mayor, for Beach as we speak today?
Priorities, we've got a lot of projects going. We have a water project that we're just finishing up. And next year, we have the road project coming in by the elevator. We got a DOT grant to redo our streets. Back when that Main Street here was put in with single axle trucks coming into the elevator. Now it's semis, and the street was really getting pounded up pretty bad because of that. And so the DOT grant will help us repave it and make it thicker and make it a better route.
What brings young people back to Beach? The barista, the owner of Badlands Barista, is one of those folks who grew up here,
yeah,
went to school, and then came back. Why do people come back to Beach?
I think opportunities. I know several people that had moved away and moved back, you know, again because of COVID. You know, and they came back, started working with the parents. Chance Plumbing, his sons all come back. They all were skilled in that, and so they started working together, and now the kids are back and working, and their kids are going to school here, so it's great.
We're enjoying our conversation with Mayor Walter Lisinski. He's the mayor of Beach, North Dakota. Exit 1, yeah, if you're looking on your map, off I-94. Mayor, this is an economic development and renaissance zone. Yeah. What is that?
The Renaissance Zone in economic development is done through the state, and it allows you to get incentives. You know, you get tax breaks if you start a business. You get financial support if you're going to remodel or you're going to repurpose a building to run a business out of that may have been sitting empty for quite a few years. So,
you have parks, you have a pool.
Yeah.
Is that a big priority for you?
Yes.
Tell me what it means to the community.
You know, the pool is a really good example of the community getting together, because it almost closed, you know, years ago, because it cost so much to run. And it came down to the people wanted something for their kids and agreed to keep it running. And the city took the initiative then to take some of our sales tax money that we got in, and we apportioned a lot of that to the pool to keep it open and to make sure that the kids had somewhere to go.
What are your biggest challenges, Mr. Mayor, that you kind of think about as you're thinking about Beach and its future?
Our aging infrastructure. Any small town in North Dakota, you know, we're over 100 years old here, and there's infrastructure. The water mains that we just replaced on the southeast corner. That's the oldest section in town. And my city works guy come in, he was all excited. He said, it's the best water we've ever sent to the state. And it came back so good. And I've had people across in town here go, man, that's great. He said, no dirty water, no rusty water, you know, so that's a plus.
Do you feel connected to North Dakota, being so close to Montana?
I do. I grew up in Montana, in that just across the border. Went to high school, graduated, came to North Dakota to get my education. I went to Dickinson State University there. And yeah, I feel connected. I've been here longer than I've been anywhere else.
You have just about 1,000 residents. Is the population of Beach growing a little bit, staying the same?
I would think it's growing a little bit. We've had little influx throughout the summer of people coming and going. The city newspaper editor down here is from Delaware. And they came out because the opportunity was there. And wonderful, wonderful person, and she's just great to work with. So yeah, I think it's good.
How did the oil boom that happened north of here, about 90 minutes, a couple hours, impact the community?
It did. We were on the tail end. We didn't get hit like a lot of places did, where people came in and built, and then it went away and they were stuck with empty buildings. We weren't like that, but during the boom, we had every apartment building, house that was available to be rented or to redo. And we were probably somewhere around 1,100 people or more at that time. But when the oil boom broke, we weren't impacted like a lot of communities because we were on the edge.
Is there any home building happening in Beach?
Yes, there have been several over
there. That has to be exciting for you.
It is. Well, and like in the park, just across the street here, the Pavilion. That was an individual that lived here when he was young. Helped his dad. They built the rock wall along where the railroad tracks are. And he said, if you build a pavilion, I will donate $100,000 to that project. And so over the course of a few meetings and that, we talked about it. We made the commitment to do it. And local people donated money to it. We're very blessed. It's like when we built the fire hall, my first project, all of the contractors got together at that point because we didn't have a lot of money. And donated their time and labor for putting it together. We put that fire hall up on the hill that way, and the pavilion was also done that way. All the contractors would get together. We're going to work on it this weekend, and they put that pavilion up without any expense in labor. So it's great.
For someone who is thinking, you know, I could maybe move somewhere.
Yeah.
Mayor, why should they move here to Beach, North Dakota? What would you tell somebody?
I love Beach simply because I know everybody. I leave my keys in the pickup by mistake, and this pickup's still there and the next day. I think that it is a wonderful place to grow a new family. You know, if you got small kids, we got a lot of, a lot of things that foster that.
You're not far from Medora and Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
No.
Do you feel its influence?
Yeah.
In what way?
The influx of people that come and stop going through our gas stations on top of the hill, the rest area. You know, at the rest area, we staff it so that people, when they come through and they enter into North Dakota, they're the first people that they meet, and we have maps, all of that stuff.
So that's a city employee who's at the rest area?
Yeah, they are. And we take our lodging tax, and that's what we spend the lodging tax on, is staffing that and so far this year, I think we've done over 3,000 or 4,000 people through there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they pass out a lot of literature.
Did current funding issues from the federal government impact Beach at all? And if so, how?
It did impact us a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit. When they were freezing funding, it affected us.
Did you have projects underway?
We did. We had our water projects that we are just completing, and everything went on hold. And all of a sudden we went, whoa, we've already had it bidded. We bid it out. We accepted the bid. We had crews starting to move equipment in, and all of a sudden all of our funding was froze. And we're going, oh, no.
Are you concerned that future projects will be tougher to come by relative to federal support?
Yeah, I think it will.
For small towns, huge deal?
It's huge, huge deal. It's like the funding from the state. 3% into our general fund.
Increase. Yay, right?
Yeah, 3%. Woo.
Which equated to?
About $5,300 or $58, somewhere in that. That'll fill a few potholes, like two. And so, yeah, that hurt a lot. And when they did it, we sat in that meeting and they go, yep, none of you are going to like it because it's going to hurt every one of you. And because most of the stuff that it impacts heavily is the small towns. You know, the larger towns are not impacted as much. And they specifically said that when we were at the meeting in Medora, that it was going to hurt the smaller communities worse than it was going to hurt the big towns. And of course, that's the way it always is.
One of your side hustles, Mayor, is that you're a DJ.
I am.
Does that surprise folks?
Sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Give me your best DJ voice, would you?
My best DJ voice, wow. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. I hope you're here to have a good time, because we're definitely going to try to make it fun for you.
My guest has been Mayor Walter Lisinski. He's the mayor of Beach, the first town you see when you're coming on I-94 into North Dakota from the west. Mayor, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, I'm going to share a little feature with you that today I'm calling What is Mike Olson Playing? Mike Olson is the host of our Roots Rock and Jazz service, which you can stream anytime, anywhere at prairiepublic.org or on the Prairie Public app or smart speaker. He hosts Into the Music weekdays 9 a.m. to 10 and then again from noon till 6. He's just one of the most creative DJs you're ever going to hear in the country. And one guy that he has been pretty hit to over the years is a singer-songwriter named Hayes Carl. He's got some new music out, and we'll preview a little bit of that coming up next on Main Street. Support for Prairie Public is provided by Dr. Julie Peterman Bryant of the Bryant Clinic of Chiropractic and Acupuncture in Bismarck. Naturally working with people to feel better, be healthy, and live well at all ages. It's got groove, it's got meaning. Grease is coming to Sleepy Hollow Theater and Arts Park in Bismarck from July 24th to August 2nd. Relive the rock and romance of Danny and Sandy live under the summer sky with classic hits like Summer Nights and Greased Lightning. Featuring a live orchestra, professional lighting, costumes, and sets, this electrifying production will have you dancing in your seat. Tickets available online at shtap.org, or you can call 701-319-0894 for reserved seating. 'Tis the season to celebrate America. We just had Independence Day, and now we look ahead to the 250th anniversary of this country. That would be next year, and some of us may be feeling, well, a little anxious. Perfectly capturing that mood is one Hayes Carl. Is there anything more America 2025 than the independent country rocker putting out a new song that perfectly captures the tune of 25? On the twangy mid-tempo progress of man, Bitcoin, and cattle, Carl laments,
"World's getting turned on by assholes and racists. It's all for the progress of man."
A crypto bro he ain't, it would seem. On his forthcoming album, We're Only Human, the witty Texicana star gets a little help from his friends, including fiancé Allison Moore, as well as Charlie Mars, Shovels and Rope, his mentor Ray Wiley Hubbard, Nicole Atkins, and Gordy Quist of recent collaborators back in October, Band of Heathens, who co-produced the record. Equally self-reflective as he is judgmental of these times, Carl seems to have found a bit of peace amid the chaos on the new tune, High.
Sometimes this old world scares me to death, steals my joy until there's nothing left, covers up the light and knocks out all my breath. And sometimes this old world scares me to death, but right now I'm just the right amount of high.
Hayes Carl, Americana outlaw and writer of a song you might know, K-Mag Yo-Yo, the satirical, hallucinogenic, I think anti-war song, somewhere between James McMurtry's Choctaw Bingo, Buddy Todd Snyder's America's Favorite Pastime about the LSD poppin' pitcher Doc Ellis, and Arlo Guthrie's Thanksgiving classic Alice's Restaurant. Well, he's back in play at a time when maybe we need country to question the country.
Thought I'm going anywhere, but I'm too afraid to run. So I got myself a new plan, stealing from the Taliban. Make a little money, turning poppies into heroin. Sergeant didn't like it, so they put me in a hole. I said, is he shooting when they don't know where to go? Threw me on a lily pad, sent me home to no red. I knew I'd be in trouble, but I didn't think it'd be this bad.
There's a little bit of classic Hayes Carl. K-Mag Yo-Yo, you can hear many songs from his career and discover his brand new music from his forthcoming album, We're Only Human, on Into the Music with Mike Olson. Catch that on our Roots Rock and Jazz stream weekdays 9 to 10, and then again from noon to 6 p.m. here on Prairie Public and prairiepublic.org. And for Prairie Public, I'm Eric Dethridge. Support for Prairie Public is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 14th. On this date in 1889, the Bismarck Tribune reported that Wahpeton has a large and juicy scandal for the delectation of gossip. A Fargo divorcee got off the train in Wahpeton to meet a prominent man for a romantic rendezvous. She had written a letter indicating the time and date, but she was met with a stinging hot surprise party. Mrs. Sunderhoff had intercepted the letter and was waiting at the depot along with her brother, father, and a horsewhip. According to the Tribune, a general punishment and fracas ensued, with a large crowd of spectators and tongue-waggers present. There were revolvers flourished and arrests made and all kinds of trouble created, added the Jamestown paper. The errant husband and the Fargo woman were charged with adultery, but the charges were dismissed. It was reported that Mr. and Mrs. A. E. Sunderhoff would separate but not divorce. Mr. Sunderhoff, born in Austria, was a widely admired figure, an adventurer, and an unrepentant cad. He was well-educated, spoke several languages, and held public offices, including county auditor and fire department chief. He practiced law and was appointed register of the Fargo Land Office, living there for 4 years before returning to Wahpeton in 1898. At the outbreak of the Spanish-American War, he was appointed a lieutenant in Grigsby's Rough Riders. Shortly after his return, his wife died, leaving 6 children. Sunderhoff took them to Lidgerwood and left them with friends so he could go on a gold hunting expedition to Alaska. He visited them once for a few hours in 1901 and reportedly never saw or communicated with them again. By 1905 and 1906, he was prospering in New York City with his second wife, but he was ordered back to Wahpeton and arrested on charges of bigamy desertion, and non-support brought by his once close friend and former father-in-law, Adolph Bessie, the city attorney. Sunderhoff got off easy in court with a small fine and a brief visit to his estranged children. In the end, Mr. Bessie turned out to be a better man. His grandchildren were raised well, popular, cherished youngsters whose accomplishments were often reported in the local papers. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Lise Erdrich. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
The FM Kicks Band presents summer big band concerts showcasing the sound of jazz for 50 years. July 17th at 7 p.m. at Gooseberry Park in Moorhead, and July 18th at 7 p.m. at Riverfront Pavilion in Fergus Falls. Details at fmkicksband.com. Well, that is Main Street for a Monday. I'm Eric Dethridge. I'll be in for Craig Blumenschein all this week. Hope you enjoyed the program today. And do check out, if you missed the interview earlier, with Barb Gravel and our CEO John Harris about the documentary on TV that we're premiering tonight, Lawrence Welk, a North Dakota farm boy. We'll make sure you tune in 7 p.m. Central, 6 Mountain, and watch the hour-long documentary. It's a labor of love here at Prairie Public, and we're pretty sure it's a great reflection on the state that gave us one of the most beloved TV entertainers of all time, Lawrence Welk. Check it out, 7 p.m. Central, 6 Mountain on Prairie Public. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll catch you tomorrow.